You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks again.
Mark, silver has been going crazy lately. What's the story there, and is this silver madness going to continue?
Well, it got to 64.36 today. Gold, let's get to 42.86, which is still shy of that 4,400 level. That's an open question. You know, silver has become real speculative here. It's sort of in a, I don't want to call it a blow-off stage of some kind, at least short-term. It just keeps going up, but it's definitely, you got to be careful if you're chasing it up here. I mean, it wouldn't go anywhere when it was $10, $12, $15, you know, for so many years, and here it is finally breaking out and really running. The speculators say it could be $80 is the next big technical resistance level, and you can talk to bulls that can make up all kinds of numbers. You really just really can't judge how far euphoria could take it. Many argue that it's just not emotional, that's fundamental reasons for it. It's catching up for years and years that it didn't participate when gold was running. And, you know, many even speculated back in 2011 that it should be $100, but it never got there. So, you know, just hang on to the coins. It's difficult buying and selling the physical stuff because there's big premium and discounts. You know, usually you got to pay 5% or more on the sell and buy side. So you're sort of into a losing trade when you first get into it, unless you just hold on to it. You know, is this time different than the past where, you know, it goes to big highs, then collapses, and you wait 20 years to get even? You know, you just don't know that. You just don't know that. But you know, the times sort of point to with financial issues around the planet. We can get into all that stuff and geopolitical issues that, you know, maybe this is a time to hang on for a while. But, you know, many that hold it, including myself, you know, I've been holding this stuff for years. I mean, I was buying stuff in gold in the 1980s and 70s and, you know, paying all kinds of prices from, I don't know, 500 down to 200, you know, now watching it at 4,300 and silver. God, you know, you were able to buy that at $5 at one point in the last 20 years. So it's, or maybe $8 is a better number. In any event, the trend is your friend, at least short term. If you're trading, you know, you try to buy pullbacks, I guess.
Well, gosh, you know, we're old enough to remember when the Hunt brothers from Texas tried to corner the silver market back in the late 70s, early 80s. And, back then, silver fillings were at your dentist. Your dentist gave you a silver surcharge. But I noticed after the prices went down, they never stopped charging you so much for fillings.
And, you know, that rally was killed by the government, and the government's not doing that this time. What happened with the Hunt brothers is, I think, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission or the SEC or both, or I think it was the exchange, now that I think of it, just raised margin requirements on traders at such high levels that it forced liquidation in the market. So the government actually got involved in trying to bring that market down and temper it. And I don't think it's going to do that this time, particularly under the current administration, you know, intentionally raising margin requirements. So it's a little different times then. So plus there's a lot of, you know, we all talk about the physical uses for silver all over, you know, how it's in demand worldwide and how the price has been suppressed for many years. And that was, you know, not just casual observations. I mean, there were those who are manipulating and we're manipulating the silver market. You know, some big firms, I don't want to mention names, but they're actually, you know, criminal charges filed and penalties paid for many individual traders working for some of these large firms that were it was actually documented that they were suppressing the price and manipulating the markets. So much of that is in our past, and I guess reflecting on your earlier question, you know, if that's not happening anymore, you know, I guess the sky's the limit if you don't have you know, big banks and government interference, so to speak, in a free market. So, you know, maybe the lid's has been taken off here, where it had been kept on for so many years intentionally. I mean, it was an orchestrated depression. It wasn't just, oh, casual comments on my part. I mean, it was active parts to do that. So you know, we're just going to have to wait and see, like anything else. It's fun watching it, though, you know, and if you own some, I guess, just keep it. You know, we don't know where the top is.
Are there fears that President Trump might impose tariffs on silver like he did with copper?
I haven't heard of it. I haven't heard of it. If he thinks that it would help the U.S. in some way, I guess anything is possible. There's so much silver that, you know, is produced outside the country, particularly in Mexico and other places, but there are a lot of domestic producers as well. That's totally off my plate here in terms of speculating what President Trump would do or not do there. But the copper thing was short-lived because it didn't cover all the copper variables. And I know Freeport-McMoRan, the big copper company, which is also in the gold business, is based here in Arizona, and their stock's starting to recover quite a bit. And, you know, there's a lot of fundamental reasons for this. You know, we talk about rare earths and the need for metals and base metals and commodities in terms of all the industrial and technological needs. You know, we can talk about platinum or palladium, which have also been doing better. So a lot of support for the metals now. It's a commodity cycle, no question about it. We waited for years for this. We finally got it.
Copper at record highs as well. Is it going to be a bright story there for a while?
You know, I'm guessing yes. I mean, there's so much money being thrown at, you know, the data centers construction and the nuclear facility rehabilitation and building. And so much demand for copper and energy to build these centers, and it's all, you know, based on this big demand for, you know, AI and everything else, that it's going to take, you know, a few years till all these things are completed. And they are very expensive, and they do require many of these very specialized metals, including copper and rare earths as well, as you know. That's why we got into this big dispute with China, because they control the rare earth business, and now we're scrambling, you know, out of stupidity all these years, not supporting North American development of rare earths. And now finally the light bulb goes off, and boy, we should have been doing that, because otherwise China could cut us off in 10 minutes, which they still are capable of doing. You know, when you think about it, whether it's 80 or 90% of the rare earths coming out of China, and we need these for all technological, you know, equipment and machinery and so forth. It's really stupid, right, that we'll put ourselves in that position. It's like saying, you know, we need oil and we'll be dependent on the Mideast for oil. And we finally came to the realization, not with the prior administration, but with the current one, that, you know, drill, baby, drill, you know, drill all the oil you need and become self-sufficient, which is really what we should be with metals as well. So, and you don't want to be dependent on people that may not be your friends.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, the Fed cut its trend-setting rate once again. What's the impact, Ben?
Well, it's a really interesting story with the Fed, because Jay Powell, you know, there's an expression I was using, he Powellized, so to speak, the markets when he started making comments about hesitating on lowering rates or the variables that might, you know, prohibit that from going forward. And that's a little setback in the markets in the last month or two. And suddenly out of the blue, instead of being hawkish, he became dovish. And is this because he knows he's going to be replaced by Donald Trump coming up this summer? And we already have, I think it's Hallett, I think his fellow's name, who's the nominee for the Fed chairman that Trump's been talking about. In any event, you know, there's something more to the story. You know, he flip-flopped in a way, and he started talking about, implying that we're going to start seeing quantitative easing. in the markets. That means the Fed's out there buying short-term treasuries instead of selling them. And we usually only see quantitative easing like back in 2008 when we had a financial crisis. So my big question is, what's the Fed know that they're not telling us? And as you know, in my previous couple interviews, I've been mentioning the issue in Japan. And the 10-year yield over there hasn't broken through that 2% level. Remember, it was zero for years and years and years. And it's getting up there. And if it breaks through that 2%, that could, you know, possibly, you know, trigger a panic in the financial markets around the world and imply, you know, push of higher interest rates and so forth. And they're very much aware of that. I mean, the effect of the Japanese central bank and the amount of business they do worldwide is huge. And any change in that interest rate picture, any more dramatic change, could affect world markets. So I think, you know, the Fed's worried about that. They're not saying it. Why would they do quantitative easing, and why they, you know, start acting aggressively in times where you don't even think they needed to act aggressively? You know, is the economy really that bad? Are they telling us, you know, something going on we don't know about? We know the job picture hasn't been, you know, really great. We know a lot of people complaining about the economy not doing as well. Yet the stock market and the equity markets are at all-time highs. So the man in the street doesn't seem to be doing so great. But, you know, if you want to go buy a home, it's still expensive. Financing cars is expensive. So I think it's Japan. And, you know, they may say, oh, they're worrying about the employment situation too. But I just thought, you know, there's something going on here, you know, and again, it may be Japan, but they're not talking about it. Maybe there's some other reasons that they decided to become aggressive and start talking about or implying quantitative easing. So they're in effect saying that something bad could be coming or could have in the process of unfolding, and we needed to do something to put our brakes on this. So, you know, just lowering the rate 0.25% is not as dramatic as having quantitative easing. I mean, that's where they're actually, you know, running the press and pumping money into the system, and they're buying treasuries, and they're doing whatever they can to get rates down, the bond market up. You know, so is it perhaps he just feels bad that he's losing his job, and he wants to go out with a bang because he knows the next Fed chairman's going to dramatically lower rates? But it's not also it's this quantitative easing issue and the ability of the printing press to do all kinds of creative stuff at the Fed, which is really the story all along. And I mentioned in previous interviews, the money supply really has been going up the last year or two. I mean, it hasn't been coming down. So that's M2, which is the big measure that, you know, many economists look at, and that's, you know, that says that they've been more relaxed in their monetary approach. They haven't really been restrictive if the money supply is going up. And now with this quantitative easing, so what's the bottom line here? I mean, the stock market loved it today. I mean, the Dow was up 600 points in the S&P. We're going to see new highs and probably continued run here. And I guess they're fulfilling the wishes of those who are looking for the Santa Claus rally. And it's obviously underway. So it's a seasonal pattern, so they want to provide a Merry Christmas on a certain level, too. Stock market likes it. And the question is, how much will this carry into the new year or not? So I guess you enjoy the ride while it's going on. But I'm still, you know, the cynic part of me worries about why that sudden dramatic change on their part. And I do suspect that's coming out of Japan and so forth, but we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. Meanwhile, if you're in the market, enjoy it while it lasts.
What's going on with uranium?
Still doing okay. I mean, the big company, Cameco, had a big correction and then start to rally back. You know, it's a multi-year play. I mean, many of the stocks are discounting it by their huge moves. And so when I refer to a stock like Cameco, I mean, the stock was within the last year and a half, you know, a $30 stock, and then it goes up to 115, you know, nearly quadrupled in the value, and that's a source for uranium. And then, of course, the demand started, I believe, when Microsoft came out and said they want to get Three Mile Island, the former nuclear facility, back online so they can generate energy they need for AI and for data centers and so forth. So that certainly kicked into play. It doesn't appear like they're not spending money. So there's a lot of push toward nuclear and stocks like Cameco, and there are other names out there that benefit from this. I guess the big stock that exploded the last 24 hours or 48 hours to a new high was GE Vernova, ticker symbol GEV. I mean, we're talking a $700 stock. The high was around 660, and then it surges to 740. And what do? Well, they create much of the equipment that's needed for the energy production. Though part of it is also a natural gas boilers and equipment. A lot of it is nuclear related. So that stock exploded. So what the answer to your question is money being spent anticipatory moves on these companies for future benefit? And the warning is that, these things don't get built overnight, but the market is discounting into the future. So, you may be chasing it, but then again, they keep going up. So you have to make a short or long-term decision. I always wait for pullbacks in the stuff. I don't chase them, but obviously, the wind is at the back of the industry, particularly since the White House is behind it and the push toward, energy independence. And, it's a big Mag 7, companies, they're like the Microsoft and so forth that have been out there, Google and others, into AI and funding, a lot of this data center expansions is behind this nuclear push. For years and years, everyone hated nuclear. My old friend and probably your old friend, Jim Dines, from many years ago, I've known him for many, many years. He was a big nuclear buff, and he was correct. Ultimately, for years he was saying that the uranium is the future, and he passed away, as you know, in recent years. But he was right about the future, what was coming, and so we had to wait years for this finally to kick in. I mean, you mentioned nuclear or uranium to anybody, and they throw you out the door in fear that they're going to get vaporized, by radiation, and we never even want to talk about that as a source of energy, even though the military and space and everybody else uses it. They didn't want it in their own backyard, but now maybe they still don't, but there are newer types of, there's newer technology out there that makes it hopefully a lot safer than, the big incidents that we've read about, like Chernobyl and the Three Mile Island and others in the recent decades. In any event, it's here to stay for now, and we need it. I mean, where are we going to get the energy from? We're not going to get it from solar. We're not going to get it from the wind. We're not going to get it from geothermal. I mean, they're going to account for, small percentages of the energy demands that are being made on society. So long question is, uranium is still positive until it isn't.
What's going on with crude and natural gas?
Well, natural gas had a big run up in the last 10 days, and then it had a big sell-off. And the excuse being given is that, we thought we were going to have a lot of cold weather, and some forecasters saying, it's going to be a lot warmer than we thought. The weather's not going to be as bad. And of course, that could change in 10 minutes. It's like, weather forecasting is worse than stock market forecasting. The weatherman could, look at all the charts and give you a forecast and then look out the window and see the complete opposite happening. That's a story. It's sort of the joke in the weather forecasting, business. So, best answer is, the forecast is the forecast, and you just had to look at your charts and your data. But natural gas had the big run up, and I thought it was more of a function, the discussion that I had read was, the nuclear is going to take so long to get underway, and GE Vernova, the company I just mentioned, produces a lot of natural gas equipment, and apparently they're getting a lot of demand for that. So what's happening is, if we have to wait 2, 3, 4 years for a nuclear to come on board, let's buy those natural gas generators and equipment and power our AI and other data center needs with natural gas in the meantime until nuclear gets on board. So that was sort of the rationale why natural gas was getting any attention, not so much the weather. That was my impression. Now the weather is the story. I'm not sure the move in natural gas is over. We had a nice run up toward the $5 level, U.S. dollar level. Now it's back to about the 3.5-4 level, and I don't know if it's done yet. I mean, I wouldn't discount that we can get another run in natural gas. As far as oil is concerned, it's a drill baby drill situation. But still, some of the oil stocks have been, physical stocks have been acting better and still making money. you know, company like Chevron has near like a 3.5% yield on its stock as a dividend. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to own some oil companies that still seem to make money, even with the oil, crude oil flirting around that, you know, $60 or so a level. But there was a little rally starting, and it was looking like we're going to get a little bit more of a rally here. Then it failed the last couple of days. So I'm sort of on the fence. I'm leaning a little more positive, but I'm a little on the fence with the crude oil, natural gas. Since it had this correction the last few days, is getting tempting again on the long side, so we're watching that.
Anything going on the marijuana front?
It's been quiet. I'm just sitting here, you know, looking at the stocks, and they had a big run up here the last few months on the Donald Trump letter saying that we need more cannabis or more CBD for us senior citizens, and we should not ignore this as a health benefit. And they just sort of settled back here, and they're just sort of sitting, I guess, waiting for news. So I think they're, you know, a decent buy. They're cheap. You know, some of the ETFs are way down from where they were, and even have corrected from the run-up from a few months ago. So the cannabis business is not dead. I mean, people are buying the stuff. There's business out there. You got to pick the right companies. And sooner or later, there's going to be more government acknowledgement of that. And hopefully we get, you know, I mean, if you're in the industry, you want to see it, cannabis or marijuana rescheduled by the DEA here in the U.S. It really needs to be legalized across the country as Canada did. It's just not happening. It should be nationally recognized and legalized. And we've been waiting for years for that. I'm not pro or against cannabis. I mean, you can argue, oh, it's bad for people, it's good for people. You know, there's obviously demand for it. It's been around 5,000 years. It's like saying, you know, tell people not to eat healthy and don't eat cheeseburgers. You know what I mean? They're going to do it no matter what. But, you know, it's much of the future movement in it is not, I think, a function of demand on the part of consumers. It's government regulation that's been holding it back here. So the tax issue and the rescheduling really have to come into play. But I think some of these stocks are so cheap that, you know, if you're a speculator, they're probably worth holding.
Anything to watch on the geocosmic front?
There's always something going on. There's a couple lunar cycles coming up, too, for example. So the 19th, we got a new moon and a full moon on January 3rd. So as a trader, you look around for those kind of fun things. And we have, of course, the winter solstice here on the 22nd, and I generally always watch the seasonal patterns to see what's happening. You know, sometimes you get change of directions around that time. You know, maybe the market rallies into the winter solstice and then turns south. You know, maybe the rally is over by then. It could be a change of direction point. So I'm always watching those dates. But in terms of solar activity and so forth, there was some geomagnetic storm, and I would just refer the listeners to go to spaceweather.com and read about it. There's some interesting stuff always going on with solar sunspots and whether they're pointed to the Earth and whether that's going to create solar activity here on the planet and affect our equipment and other sort of things. So always interesting tracking it. But, you know, we have the Santa Claus rally, and you can argue that's part of the winter solstice pattern and so forth and so on. So nothing new and dramatic. I should point out that probably we could have talked about this last week. There was that big Japanese earthquake. It wasn't as big as the one that affected the nuclear, you know, many years ago, but there was suddenly some activity in Japan that caused a very small tsunami. So there's always stuff going on the planet, Jim, that's for sure.
Mark, always fun chatting with you. Look forward to Thanks. Next time.
Take care. Same here.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.